This is Talk Is Cheap on KPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peace Works Independent Community Radio, also on radioforall.net, djsusty.org for more information on me that's kind of under construction. All right, continuing on with the Pilk lectures, this is called Joy in the Fight. It's about kind of recharging during these times of strife, how to recharge and be more effective in these troubling times. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends, support independent media.
Okay. Hi, everyone. How's it going? Can everyone hear me okay? Okay. We don't have microphones, so definitely let us know if you can't hear us. Before we get started, I just want to make sure everyone is in the right room. Are you all here to see the joy in the fight? Yay. Okay. Amazing. This is the vibe we want to bring, so thank you for that. Okay, so welcome to our panel. As I mentioned, it's called The Joy in the Fight, Building Grassroots Power Through Community and Courage. It should come as no surprise to anyone here that we are in a moment that demands both courage and creativity if we are going to get through this together. And so this panel is going to explore how we can use joyful resistance and community building as a really strategic way of building momentum and keeping groups together and being able to sustain the momentum that we're building. And so this is really guided by lessons in joy and courage and real world accountability campaigns. So what we want to talk about today is that joy is not only fun, like yes, of course, we all want to have fun in the work that we're doing, but it's also a really necessary thing to include in our work. This moment is pulling people's attention in a lot of different directions, and everyone's emotions are going up and down, and sometimes that can be really challenging. And so what we want to talk today is about how we can harness joy and use that to keep people together, keep people showing up, and it also empowering people to step deeper into action. So we're also going to explore different on-ramps for engagement and how that can be scaled depending on the size of your organization as well, ranging from really small community groups, like maybe you and your neighbors want to get together and do something, or maybe you're working at an international organization that can get boots on the ground as well. And so we're going to explore all of that today. Next slide, please. Oh, wait, I have a button.
You got it.
Amazing. Look at that. Okay, so we can introduce ourselves. So my name is Victoria Wingel. I am the grassroots campaign coordinator with Oregon Wild, and we'll all share something that brings us joy in this work. So one thing that brings me joy in organizing is really the community building aspect. I love seeing the power of people in action.
I'm Sammy Goblev. I'm also with Oregon Wild. I'm the Central Oregon Field Coordinator. Something that brings me joy, I think, is getting outside with a lot of our community and our activists in the beautiful places that we work to protect.
Would you like to go next? Yeah.
Alice Weston, she, her. I am an organizer with the Oregon chapter of the Sierra Club based in Bend. And something that brings me joy in this work is working with youth. I think that's always like pretty inspiring, gets me excited.
And I'm Gabrielle Briffel, and I'm a forest advocate with Natural Resources Defense Council. And something that brings me joy in this work is just being able to see that there are other people who also care about the things I care about. Having that camaraderie really helps get me through it. So, nice to meet everybody. So.
Okay, so here's a snapshot of what we're going to cover today. So we just introduced ourselves, and next we're going to share more about the history of using joy intentionally in movements. We are far from the first ones to do it, and we want to acknowledge the leaders who have really paved the way for this. Then we're going to talk a little bit about how you can find your own joy and find your place in the movement. And then we're each going to share some examples to highlight how different this can look like. So we'll share tips for how organizations can be very intentional about bringing joy into your campaigns and your movements. Then we'll wrap it up with some questions and answers. Okay.
Yeah. So it's this one?
Yes.
So I'm going to talk a little bit about the history of joy in the movement. As long as there have been people resisting oppression, joy has been used as a tool for building support, sustaining efforts, and just plain surviving. Joy is a tool for imagining a new future, inspiring change, and is essential to movement building work. The history of joy as resistance is a huge topic. So we're going to kind of give a few examples, but we had a hard time narrowing down because there are so many great examples. So I'm going to share a few with you guys, but we also created little zines, and we have, there's a resource that has a few books and other pieces, podcasts. I recently added some biodegradable glitter because that's also part of Joy. There's lots of different elements in there. So please feel free to grab one. We tried to put some of the history research in there. And this is a real quote I found too, as well. And I know it sounds kind of, you're like, really, this is, you don't know that side of Sojourner Truth. But this quote is, life is a hard battle anyway. If we laugh and sing a little as we fight the good fight, it all goes easier. And this quote, I think some people have seen probably around, but this is around about during the AIDS epidemic. This quote is, during the darkest days of the AIDS crisis, we buried our friends in the morning, we protested in the afternoon, and we danced at night, all night. And it was the dance that kept us in the fight because it was the dance we were fighting for. I think this is a pretty incredible quote because it's also talking about the heaviness of the work, but then also the joy and the celebrating and the community gathering aspect. So I kind of want you guys to think about, like, what is it that you're fighting for? What is it that you love and that's why you're fighting, and remembering that aspect of it. Sorry, I keep putting on my computer. This one is an example from a summer camp. I don't know if anyone's seen the movie Crip Camp. You can watch it on Netflix. So it's a pretty beautiful example as well. It's a summer camp that was established in the 50s in the Catskill Mountains, not far from where I went to school. And it was a camp designed for disabled children, teens, and adults. And like this amazing quote says, it was a place for rest as well, in which we kind of talk about a little bit, is like creating spaces for community gathering, and rest is also a big part of finding joy. And then giving people time and space to then envision a better future and have the space to feel like they can envision a better future and fight for it. So this quote, Camp Janid provided a perfect example of some of the most effective and dangerous ways of resisting systems of oppression, joy and dreaming. Yes, I said dangerous. If joy wasn't so dangerous, the people in charge wouldn't be spending so much time and effort to deny your ability to access it. And dreaming allows us to envision a better world than the one that we are currently being offered. So I think that's a big piece of it too, is that the joy allows you to really fight back and to envision collectively a better future.
All right, so if you want to dig deeper, we've got some examples of books that explore joy as activism, play, pleasure, things that can really help you, just dig a little deeper. I threw Psalm for the Wild built in there because an eco-robot is just something that brings me joy. So feel free to take a picture of this. Like Alice said, we've got lots of information and other resources and things to just sort of buoy you through this in the little zine. So if you haven't gotten one yet, feel free to grab one on your way out for sure. Okay, so I'm gonna turn it onto y'all so that we're not, just monologuing up here. What does joy mean to us? What does joy mean to you? I'm gonna open it up. What brings you joy? What does joy mean? How do you see joy in your work? Go ahead.
Ways of envisioning a new way of being and making small spaces that mirror the world we want to build and practice it.
I love that. Practicing the world you want to see. Go ahead.
Being fully human.
Humanity. Joy in humanity. Yep.
For me, joy is really rooted in community. I find that when joy is shared, it's so much more powerful.
I love that. Go ahead.
Not being on a Zoom call.
Joy in being in person. Joy in stepping away from the keyboard. I love that one. Let's do maybe two more. Anybody else? Things that bring us joy. What does joy mean? How do we see joy show up?
Singing in a group.
Singing. I love that.
Being in nature.
Being in nature. This is what brings us all together. All right, so some things that we came up with just in some brainstorming is satisfaction, taking pride in yourself, being proud of the work that you've done can be joyful. Positive change, even if it's happening slowly, even if it's happening in a microcosm, as was mentioned. Appreciation, appreciate what you do have, some gratitude, the little things that bring you delight, those are just as important as the big wins. Rest was already mentioned. Rest is essential. Community, knowing that we're in it all together. Action, even in the face of fear. Self-care, when things get too heavy, take a break. Take care of yourself. There's joy to be had in, again, your humanity, in taking a moment for yourself. Persistence, this is something that I come back to all the time. The only people who benefit from us quitting are the people who want to see us fail. Like, you just have to keep going. And aspirational, sometimes joy is hard. Sometimes joy is really hard to find, and it's really hard to accept or to sit in. So you can aspire to be joyful. It can be the end goal. Right. So this is a quote that I really like. The sharing of joy, whether physical, emotional, psychic, or intellectual, forms a bridge between the sharers, which can be the basis of understanding much of what is not shared between them and lessens the threat of their difference. So in a really fraught time for this country and our world, it's nice to think about the things that bring us joy and the bridges we can build across our issues.
So we have a climate Venn diagram in these things, actually. Here, I'll just give an example. When you open it up, they are on the back of them. Are people familiar with the climate Venn diagram? I feel like a lot of people have seen it. It's Ayanna Elizabeth Johnson, who wrote All That We Can Save. She is a marine biologist. What else? She has lots of different. If anyone wants them, you can raise your hand. And we often use this tool as a way for people just to explore. The questions are, what brings you joy? What are you good at and what needs doing? And your climate action in the middle. And just invite you guys to think about this, explore it. I feel like it changes for me. It changes for lots of people. And it can be really simple. I think often you're like, you start to jump ahead like you do on lots of like quizzes and tests. You think, oh, well, like I need to think of something that brings me joy that will obviously be a climate action. And it's not always the case. Often when we do this exercise, people find things that they, there was one time recently a volunteer was, loves doing board games. And was like, I don't think that that's a climate action. But then there was like a really great conversation with the group around how gamification can be a great way to learn, teach people and learn something new. So I think keeping this as an open tool that you can use in conversation, but can also use to challenge yourself. It's a pretty fun tool. So hopefully this is something that will kind of inspire you guys. And we'll have the link as well. So if you want to share it with other groups.
So next we're all going to share some examples of some really fun campaigns that we've worked on, and we want to focus on how joy was a really critical strategy in all of that organizing. So yes, while we had a really good time with all of this, it was also a really important piece that I don't think you can leave out, especially in these really difficult, challenging times. And that's because it creates a space to bring people together into the work. It makes it more approachable for people. And it also helps us sustain ourselves and our communities while we're often doing what can be difficult and stressful work. So while we're sharing these examples, I want to invite you all to think about how you can implement joy in your own work as well. And remember, all of these tactics can be scaled up or down depending on what tools you have to work with. So just think about that as we go ahead.
Cool. I'm going to start us off with our first example, and that's our campaign to defend the roadless rule and roadless areas. And this is a national issue, and there's a very big national coalition working on this that we're all a part of, like hundreds of groups. I'm going to touch on that a little bit. I think Gabby might a little later, just a little bit. I'm mostly going to focus on what we did in Oregon. You can see all the joyful people up here. So for some background, a lot of you may have heard last year the Trump administration announced that they will be repealing the roadless rule and fully eliminating protections for all of the places that it covers. So here's some clips from that. Just for some background, the roadless rule was established back in 2001. It's an administrative rule, administrative policy. It was established to protect nearly 60 million acres of some of our wildest national forest lands in the U.S. 2 million acres in Oregon. You can see on this map, it's all the places highlighted in blue. here. And, you know, these are places that they don't have roads, hence the roadless. Largely unlogged, undeveloped. Places that provide clean drinking water to a lot of communities. Intact fish and wildlife habitat, amazing outdoor recreation opportunities, so many other important ecological cultural values. And the roadless rule, what it does is it prohibits road construction and commercial logging, among some other things, those are the big ones, in these designated roadless areas. Just want to make a quick note, if you want to dive a little deeper into the roadless rule and what's going on with it, I'm on another panel Saturday, details are up there, where we're going to talk a lot more about this issue. But for today, I'm just going to focus a bit on our grassroots strategies and tactics, and of course, where we really leaned into Joy as a tactic in that. Of course, there are many other strategies, and again, if you want to hear about kind of the legal, legislative stuff, go to that panel on Saturday. But just backing up a bit, we had these kind of two big campaign goals. So one was defending the roadless rule itself, which again is this administrative policy. And then also we had a goal to pass a piece of legislation called the Roadless Area Conservation Act, which essentially codifies the roadless rule into law. It would legislatively provide protections to all of these places. And here's a beautiful roadless area right outside my home in Bend. Cascade Lakes roadless area, maybe some people have been there. So one of the big things that we organized around was this public comment period that happened last September. It was right after the administration officially announced that they would be repealing the roadless rule, and that kicked off a very short 21-day public comment period. Of course, our objective there was to get as many public comments submitted as possible. But we did run into a couple challenges at the beginning that were kind of important. One, we kind of found out not a lot of people really knew what the roadless rule was or what roadless areas are. You know, these places, they're not on a lot of maps. When you're walking through a roadless area, you don't usually see signs that are telling you you're in a roadless area. So a lot of people just didn't, they may go to these places and they love these places, but they didn't know that, you know, they're protected by the roadless rule and that they're threatened to lose these protections. The other thing, and, well, we're kind of in a room full of activists and lawyers and maybe future lawyers, so this might not apply to all of us weirdos here, but, you know, for normal people, I don't think they get super excited when they hear about a public comment period. You know, Joy may not be the first thing that comes to mind when one of those is happening. So we had this question, like, how do we get, you know, the normies to care about this issue, these places, and submit public comments? And to do that, we really leaned into community and connection to place. So we did a few different things to do that. First thing, created some maps. We gave these places names so people knew where the heck they are. So at Oregon Wild, we created an interactive map. Many other organizations in Oregon, all across, I think everyone did. Sierra Club had one.
Lots
you guys,
of maps.
You guys probably had one. Yeah, everyone had their own version for their own places. And these were cool because you could scroll around on them, zoom in, click on different places, find out where they are, what they're, and we gave them common names. So a lot of these roadless areas, they have names given by the Forest Service. They're often very technical and funky and not very interesting, and no one's going to remember them. So we gave them common names that people would actually know and remember. So you could scroll around here, zoom in, click on them, find the name, maybe see some photos, some information about each roadless area. Here's just a few threatened roadless areas around Oregon. And then we took people to those places. So I heard, or I said actually, something that brings me joy is getting out to these places with people. And I think someone else said that too. So we led a number of hikes and outings to different roadless areas all across Oregon. Here's a few of those examples up here just over the last 8 months, a year or so. And you know, there's like not many things that I can think of that are more joyful than going outside on a hike through a beautiful place with some cool people. And then the next thing was we really brought our community together for these advocacy events. I also heard earlier someone else said, you know, when joy is shared, it's more powerful. And I really believe that, and that's why we did these things and leaned into that. So this is a comment writing workshop that we held in Bend at Worthy Brewing last September. Alice was there as well.
I know, Matthew, there's you with Joyful.
Yeah, there's Matthew. Okay.
I see him.
And look how happy they look. Who said public comment periods couldn't be fun? So yeah, everyone, we showed up, drank some beer, wrote and submitted public comments that went into the official public record. And it was just a really fun time. And I think, you know, public comment periods, we probably all know, they're kind of a numbers game. It's a lot about quantity. You want to get as many as possible. And to do that, we often rely on online activism, which is super important. You know, those email blasts, social media, those online petitions that we all sign. Those are very critical in getting those numbers and very useful tool, and we'll, of course, continue to use them. But I think there's also a really important place for gathering in community like this, because again, you know, when that joy is shared, it's even more powerful. I know for myself, sometimes when I'm signing some petitions or clicking links on social media, sometimes, like I always do it, of course, but like the scope of the issue can feel a little bit enormous, and sometimes think to myself, like, what can my one little individual comment, can that really make a difference? But when you're with, you know, dozens or hundreds of other people and you're doing the same thing, submitting public comments, you can really see and feel, you know, how much our voices can make a difference when, you know, when we use them together. So we did have quite a lot of successes from that first comment period. These are national numbers up here, but again, this is a very short public comment period, 21 days. And over 600,000 people, or 600,000 public comments were submitted. And then the even more amazing number, over 99% of those were opposed to rescinding the rule. So that means 99% of the people who submitted public comments agreed that we should protect these places, keep these protections in place, which is pretty remarkable. I'm not sure if 99% of Americans have ever agreed about anything before. Maybe French fries. but yeah, that's pretty remarkable. We also gained a lot of co-sponsors for the Roadless Area Conservation Act, which was great. And then maybe most importantly, I think we brought a lot of energy into this campaign, this issue, this movement, and made something that was a lot more durable because, you know, this isn't going to be our last public comment period. There's going to be many, many more. There's going to be another roadless rule one. And we don't want this to be a one-off thing. We want our activists to continue to come back because we need them to come back again and again. And we want them to want to do it because they know how important their voice is. And they know they're going to have some fun when they do it as well. There's a little bit of unfinished business. So all that roadless rule comment period stuff I just talked about, that was just the first one. There's probably going to be another one very soon in the coming days and weeks. So there'll be another opportunity for all of us to use our voice, speak up for that. So stay tuned for that. And while we've gained a lot of co-sponsors for the Roadless Area Conservation Act, there is one kind of glaring name that's been missing from that list. Congresswoman Val Hoyle has not yet co-sponsored the bill, has not yet officially supported it. And I imagine we may have a few constituents of Congresswoman Val Hoyle in the room. So later, if you're up for it, I might suggest sending an email, making a phone call to her office, telling her she should probably support this bill and protect these places. And then lastly, we have a lot more community advocacy events coming up. You can see the details up here. So there'll be one in Eugene at Gratitude Brewing on April 14th.
Yeah.
For folks in Portland, April 8th, Victoria will be at that one. And then in Bend, April 6th at the OSU Cascades campus that Alice and I will be at. I don't think these are actually on Oregon Wild's website yet, but they will be soon. So look out for that.
I have a flyer and we'll have it at the Sierra Club table too.
Alice has a flyer.
For each of the different ones.
So we have a flyer for the Eugene one. I think that's it.
Cool.
Who's next?
It's me.
I was like realizing how on I had this. I was like, this is so on brand. This is like exactly. I'm gonna stop. I was like, whoa. Hi. Again, Alice Weston. She, her. I am an organizer with the Oregon chapter of the Sierra Club, and I'm based in Bend and work in Eastern and Central Oregon. And this slide, I'm going to talk about joy as practice and how do we practice it. And this is just like a hodgepodge of images that are all from me doing my job and my dog, which I think is just also helpful for joy as practice. In the thing, we have a list of suggestions, which all are based on things that we talked about, ways to practice joy. One is pet a dog, which is not based in any science that I or research, but I'm sure there is. I'm sure there is. So yeah, I'm going to talk about a little bit about how do we think about and practice joy in our work. So one thing I want you to think about is in your work as a volunteer, as a professional, as a community member, where do you have power to change things, to create things, and to implement joy in your work? So I think we have power in different ways, and we often don't think about that. We don't pause to think about where we can make choices. And I think it's really important that we really take the time to think about that. And where can you actually implement? Where do you have opportunities? And I do a lot of community work, event creation, and so there's lots of opportunities for creating joy and connection and creating spaces for community joy. But I think making that important is something that we can do, and we can give each other permission to do that. When we were putting this stuff together, there was a lot of conversation about people not feeling permission to feel joy. And so I think it's really important for us to set examples for ourselves, for our friends, our family members, our community, and our coworkers, to give people permission to feel joy, to express joy, to share joy in this work. While it is really difficult and we're in a difficult time, it's also incredibly, it's important. It's how we get through things. And then also, I'm a big believer of saying yes to the silly things. I think you can see in this previous slide, a few of us showed up at the 1.25% for a wildlife lobby day, and someone asked us if we would wear these animal masks. And so I found myself in Salem wearing an animal mask, like I guess it was 2 weeks ago. And I think that it brought so many people joy. All the kids were there who were there to talk to their representatives about the bill, and they were just like thrilled to see the animals also lobbying. So I just feel like saying yes to that step also inspires other people and gives them permission to see themselves doing things joyfully. So an example of joy in practice. We did action nights in the garden in collaboration with a lot of organizations, which I think is also key. Collaboration is so important. It's how we build community. And the first one, people kept saying how great that they were when they saw the final one, but it really started from kind of nothing. Our last Earth Day, I was a few months into my job, and I was tabling at the Environmental Center's Earth Day in Bend, and I asked one of their staff members, they have a like wine and weeds garden event where they go and you can have happy hour and you can weed in their garden, and I asked if we could have a table and just set up an action for people to do. A lot of our volunteers were saying we want something in person, and we're feeling frustrated and we want to do something and we want to see people. So all of those kind of things came together, and I was like, I asked them, can we have a table? And they said, sure. And the funny thing about it too was I went on a work trip before the first one and was pulling in at the last minute, and I was all flustered. I was like, oh, I wanted to be more prepared for this. And then Sammy showed up, and Sammy was able to help me a lot and answer a lot of questions. And there was some new stuff happening, as there have been snowballing through this administration. There was some like new latest information, and I didn't know a ton about it, and Sammy did. And Sammy ended up helping me answer so many questions from the volunteers. And at the end of it, I was like, Sammy, do you think Oregon Wild wants to have a table next time? And so Sammy had a table the next time. And then more and more of our partners, Energize Bend, Brennan showed up, this one, there was the anti-trafficking project. There were all these like collaborations and conversations around intersectional environmentalism in our community and how we can have those conversations. And we also had the politicians started showing up, which we were like, oh, what's happening? So it really evolved, and it became this kind of amazing community gathering space that people just kind of were drawn to. You're in a beautiful garden, you're eating food. I brought a lot of food. I think food is my, like, the most important thing for organizing. Always bring food. But it was just, it was kind of organic, and it ended up being built by the community members. But also, we signed a ton of petitions. We had tons of people signing petitions. We had tons of people writing to their representatives about national, state, local issues. And we had so much education happening between community members and all these organizations. And so I think that whole story is to say that, like, it was something that started off really small, and then people just were excited about it, and people helped build that together. So I think there's something that's something that anyone can do in their community. And a lot of it was also in collaboration. Ended up being so many of us that we were like ran out of tables the last time we did it. So I think collaborating with folks is just like the key part, but also just being open to trying new things like that. Let's see if there's any. And this is something we also always talk about, the abundance mindset, that your community has what you need to do this work. You just need to support each other and bring it forward. And we're not in competition. We are collaborators, and we are working together in this fight. So I think that's always something to think about, is like, how can we do stuff together and not be competing in this work? And then joy as strategy. I love all these pictures. And we talked about it being joy being strategic, and I really do think this is something that's super important, because it is. So in movement building, our goal is to invite new people in and to support existing community. So what better way to do that than to implement strategies for joy? So, and I mean this very literally, think about your organization's strategic plan. Is joy involved? Is there any bits of joy? Where can you add joy to your strategic plan, your campaign goals? I know we're all working on goals. We were talking about earlier, like, are people excited about public comment? Maybe not, but we can figure out ways to bring joy into all of our campaigns, I think. And also in our personal and professional goals as well. We are humans first before we are activists. So how can you make sure to remember to rest, self-care, but also think about ways that you can really push joy forward in your work? And an example of strategic joy, we did Climate Action Week in Bend in October. It was nothing scarier than climate change. This was youth-led. This was the first time I worked with the Deschutes Youth Climate Coalition folks. It was amazing. And they had lots of ideas about how do we make this fun for people. And it was around a campaign that Brennan works on, the Climate Impact Fee in Bend. If anyone is not familiar, I think we have lots of ways you can learn about it this week. But it's not like an easy thing for people to learn about. So how do you educate people about this local policy? And how do you get people excited about it? And the youth group had an idea about dressing up in costumes and going and telling people about this climate impact fee. I had some tools through the Sierra Club where we could do basically like door-to-door campaigning. Found them very nice, climate-friendly doors to knock, so I wasn't sending them dressed in costume for a weird conversation. I mean, it was definitely weird conversations, but within a certain scope. And they showed up with all kinds of costumes. We had an action art build night. We had a protest and then went to city council, and we had the door-to-door knocking and educating. So it was like reverse trick-or-treating, where people came and they handed them candy and told them about the climate impact fee. And one of the most amazing parts too was we went to City Hall and everyone was dressed in their costumes during, and one of them had a pumpkin on his head, and at one point he had to like go to the restroom, and he got up and was like shuffling through the city council meeting with the pumpkin on his head, and city council has like mentioned it to us multiple times. It was like very impactful. They were like, this, you know, everyone came and showed up, but they also are the same volunteers who've written letters, emails, provided testimony at future city council meetings. No, I don't think there wasn't any testimony in the costumes, but they have built kind of their comfortability with the topic and their excitement about sharing it through, there was so much built confidence in showing up to city council in costumes, but it also just like stuck with all of the other folks who were involved when they saw youth showing up and being excited and being interested. And there's been lots of mention of like how inspiring it was to see the youth show up, and you can't miss people with pumpkins on their heads. So it was really fun, and yeah, it was just joyful in the end. But yeah, I think,
what's an LTE?
That is a letter to the editor. I'm so sorry I did that. I should not have done that. But yes, we had lots of letters to the editor. That's been super successful in that campaign. Brendan's done a fantastic job. But there was lots of support in the professional sense. But there was also a lot of just like joy creation and creativity that went into that work.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, hi again, everyone. I am Victoria Wingell, she, her, and I'm with Oregon Wild, and I'm gonna share a little bit about the Rabble Rouser conference that we had last summer. This ended up being a ton of fun, both for us on the organizing crew, and we also enjoyed being there, and I think everyone had a good time being there. So I am really excited to tell you more about it. So it was an event where we got to pretend to be rock stars for a day, and we were at the Crystal Ballroom in Portland with Patagonia. Is anyone in here a fan? Yes, yes, she'll be back. And this really was like such a team effort. We had people coming in, both just stepping into roles that they didn't really plan for, both on our team and then also from other organizations as well. So this was just a huge group effort, and we had a lot of fun working together to pull it together. We also planned this in like 2 months, so it was kind of like a crazy time, and we all had a blast doing it. So I'll talk a little bit about what that event looked like by the numbers. So this is our very first Rabble Rouser conference. It was a one-day training in joyful resistance. Patagonia came and was our headliner, keynote speaker, and performer. So this happened last July. We brought together more than 200 activists, organizers, and everyday troublemakers who were coming together for an afternoon of joyful resistance, skill building, and most importantly, connection. We sent out a survey in the lead up to this event asking people what they were most excited about, and every single response, like no exaggeration at all, every response was people looking to connect with new people that they hadn't met before. They just really wanted to be in community and be surrounded by people who share the same passions that they do. So we definitely wanted to incorporate that as part of this as well. So we worked with over a dozen organizations to put this together. Some of those included ACLU of Oregon, Basic Rights Oregon, Western State Center, and then some new groups that we hadn't worked with before, like Indivisible Oregon, General Strike US, National Lawyers Guild, 350 PDX, tons of diverse organizations who all had things to bring to the table for us. And as we started to build momentum around this, there were so many organizations that wanted to participate in some way because everyone wants that joy in community. So we ended up finding ways to include people. So we had like a bunch of groups tabling. We included all of their resources on our website, just anything we could to bring more people together and kind of diversify what the topics would include. And from the moment the doors opened, the energy there was pretty electric. We had a jump scare mic test, which was really funny. An accident, but a welcomed one. And then we had an icebreaker exercise led by Vominos Outside that aimed to bring strangers together. So we really wanted people to leave this event feeling more connected to their community and also meet new people that they could organize with. And so we had a friend-finding scavenger hunt going on when folks arrived. So we gave everyone a card, and we asked them to group up with people who had similar passions, shared a favorite hobby, or even lived in the same neighborhood. And then we encouraged them to go and check out some of the panels together.
So after that, everyone dispersed into breakout sessions that were all specially designed to meet this moment's challenges. So we hosted six different panels. There was Organizing 101. There was Using Art to Amplify Your Activism, where folks came together to actually build paper mache sculptures to bring to rallies. Know Your Rights in Digital Security. There was a panel focused on going beyond collectivism, which really centered on the fight for public lands. So you've signed petitions, you've participated in comment periods, but what's the next step? We had another panel on Trump-proofing your community, so how you can make change at the state and local level if the federal landscape is making you nauseous too. There are other ways that you can get involved. And then we also had a discussion on mutual aid for resilient communities. Again, like how do we strengthen the bonds that we have with our neighbors? How many of us in this room know our neighbors? Do we know what we need? Do we know what they need? And how can we grow that community together? And then the night concluded with a keynote presentation from the one and only Patagonia. And she really taught us that joy is the lifeblood of any successful movement. We danced, we laughed, we jumped on the bouncy floor. I don't know if any of you have been to the Crystal Ballroom, but that is an experience. There was confetti everywhere. It was pretty awesome. Okay, so the plan for this event came from a challenge that we had at Oregon Wild to think bigger. We knew that this moment called for a really huge response. So this slide is about our what. And these are just some of the goals that we set out to accomplish with this conference. We knew that we needed to re-elevate public lands issues into the discussion so that we don't lose sight of the threats that they face. As you know, the zone is being totally flooded, and I mentioned earlier that a lot of folks' attentions are being pulled in a million different directions, and it all deserves space, and we just really wanted to make sure that we're not losing this critical piece as well. This was also an opportunity to bring movements together and create a more clear line for us to work with organizations that we often work in parallel with, but usually have trouble overlapping and connecting in a more meaningful way. So this is a really great way to build on those connections, try new things. A rising tide lifts all boats, so this was a really great opportunity to work with new groups as well. And we also wanted to take the overwhelming feelings that our base of supporters were having and channel that energy into something that was tangible and actionable and productive. And importantly, we knew that we can't do this work alone. Grassroots organizing really is the backbone of everything that we do. And so we wanted to empower the next generation of organizers who maybe didn't know where their role was in this movement. We wanted to help them step into that. So that they can participate in their communities in a much more proactive way, too.
So that was the pre-event organizing, where it kind of started.
Yeah, exactly. We were like, this moment is huge, and we need to do something huge to meet it. And then this is kind of the why, so that was a really great segue into that. So our inbox at Oregon Wild started getting absolutely flooded with requests from volunteers looking for opportunities. And previously, we didn't really have an ongoing volunteer program set up. Of course, we always want folks participating in comment periods and writing letters to the editor and things like that, but we didn't really have a home where just anyone could plug in at any time. And it was very clear that our base had a lot of energy and motivation and didn't know where to start. And at the time, we didn't know what to do with that either. And so this was an opportunity for us and for other organizations in this space to really emerge as leaders and provide that guidance and direction to a base of activists who are ready and willing to do what they needed to do. They just maybe want to see what their options are and have some support in taking that on themselves. And importantly, we also really need our activist base to be engaged with our issues too. And so this was a way to accomplish that goal as well. So how does that fit into the overall picture? So as I mentioned earlier, Rabble Rouser is a unique way to diversify our movement. Oregon Wild is a conservation group, and we hosted a Know Your Rights training with ACLU, which usually there's not much overlap, but that's what the moment is calling for. And so we widened our tent to include groups from the LGBTQ community, social and environmental justice groups, civil rights groups, outdoor recreation groups, lots of different organizations. And this was also a really big draw for young people, which is something that is often missing from the conservation space. And we're always looking to bring younger voices into the fold as well. So this was a fun way to do that. And then Patty, this throwing the better party quote was something that came from Patagonia's keynote presentation at the end. She talked about how putting in unique and fun events like this can help to draw more people in. It also serves to build connections with each other and strengthen the movement as a whole. So this conference was actually a jumping off point for the relaunch of our Wild Ones program. We realized we do need a space for all of this energy, and so that's where Wild Ones emerged from, which I'll talk about in a little bit. Now we're starting to build on having a group of folks who are ready to go whenever we need an engaged base to kind of rise to the next moment. Like, we're seeing more comment periods opening up for different logging projects on public lands at an increasing pace, and the length of time we have to comment and engage on these processes is shrinking as well. And so Sammy mentioned that folks didn't really know what the roadless rule was. Now we have this opportunity to kind of like rapidly respond because we have this activist base that has been coming together and meeting more regularly, and they're ready to go to rise to the moment when we need that. And so before I move into telling you more about Wild Ones, this is a plug for our next Rabble Rouser event. It's going to be August 23rd at the Crystal Ballroom again in Portland. Tickets are going to be available in June. But if you scan this QR code, you can put your name on a list and you'll get an email as soon as we have them. And that's also linked in the resource guide in the zine as well. So I hope to see you there. It is really fun, and Patty's shows have sold out in Oregon. So this is like the only way you'll be able to see her this year, and it's going to be a more fun way too. Okay, so I like to think about Rabble Rouser as being the spark, and then Wild Ones is the fire that keeps it burning. So Wild Ones, as I mentioned, is a group that comes together more regularly. This is how we keep feeding our activist base. This work really is more important now than ever, so we decided to relaunch this program in response to the extreme attacks that we're seeing coming down from the administration on our public lands. And we see this program as a way to really grow and strengthen this community so that we're ready to respond to whatever the administration throws at us. And so if any of you folks are feeling fed up and fired up and you're ready to take action, come and join us. We meet both online and in person. At our core, we believe that we really are stronger together, and it should come as no surprise that the stakes are really high in this moment and the challenges that we face are enormous. But we don't have to face them alone. So it's our hope that Wild Ones can become the community that you can turn to when you're feeling both inspired and looking for ways to take action, but also when you're feeling really down and need to borrow some hope from like-minded people around you. Joy is resistance. We've talked about that a lot today. Gabby mentioned earlier that the only ones who benefit from us giving up are the ones who want us to fail, and that is extremely true. And so adding in these community elements and bringing people together is just helpful in keeping us all in the fight, even when it seems hard or impossible, or if you want to give up. Leaning on your friends and your community is a really important way of staying in it and taking care of yourself too. So in the coming months, we're going to have even more online and in-person events for folks. Hold that up. Oh, actually, before I tell you about the upcoming stuff, let me tell you about a really fun series we just did. So are folks in here familiar with the 1.25% for Wildlife campaign? Yes, I see some hands. Who in here worked on that? Everyone deserves a huge round of applause for that. So for folks who are unfamiliar with this effort, it was a campaign that has been going on for many years now to pass a House bill that would dedicate more funding towards protecting imperiled species in Oregon. And this was, what did Quinn refer this as? She said it was a marathon with a sprint at the end. And I think that is a really perfect way of summing it up, and shout out to the people who had been in this in the long haul. But this bill did pass just a couple weeks ago and is on its way to the governor to be signed, so shout out to everyone who worked on this. And these photos are from some of the Wild Ones events that we held in support of this. We had not a ton of time to organize people around this issue, And so we wanted to be as creative as possible, and we ran like a trial run within Wild Ones of focusing on a series of events. So rather than just a one-off training where you come and write a letter to the editor or something like that, we had multiple sessions that were all in service of this campaign. So folks could feel like they were really a part of a growing movement, and then it paid off in the end too. And so some of these photos, we got really creative with the tactics, y'all. We started this back in December, and we were making some holiday cards to send to legislators. We also stitched together some felt wildlife ornaments to mail out. There's some photos from the Day of Action as well, which included a lobby day. So we had a couple of lead-up events to that so we could train people how to talk to their legislators in person if you've never done that before. We really wanted to make sure that people felt like they were empowered to do so and that they knew how to do that as well. There's photos from the funky animal mask that you all brought as well. And then we even had a flash tattoo day. So basically what I'm getting at here is there are so many different ways to bring people together, and campaigns like this is really where your creativity can shine. And offering multiple on-ramps for engagement is really important. So you can involve people who are maybe brand new to the issue and just want to come together for a fun night of arts and crafts and eat pizza and talk to people, or you can gather up the people who really have some skin in the game and want to tattoo it on their bodies forever. So there's ways for everyone to get involved in this work. Okay, and then here's what's coming up next for Wild Ones if folks are looking to get involved. The next one is on March 23rd. That's going to be a virtual event where we're going to cover content creation for conservation. Social media has just become an even more important tool for us to use for digital organizing and getting that quantity of comments and petition signatures and things like that. And so we're going to walk through how we can actually train the algorithm to work to our advantage and how you can get your message out there. So if you had a microphone that could reach a million people, what would you say? This training will help you narrow that down. And then we're going to have an in-person training March 26th in Portland. We have a very exciting summer of events coming up where we want people going out, speaking with our neighbors face-to-face and telling them about this work and bringing more people into the fold. So shout out to Macy, who's going to be leading that in Portland. On April 2nd, we have a virtual event. This is going to be an intro to public lands defense workshop. So we're going to talk about which agencies are taking care of different pieces of land and what their processes look like and how we can plug in. Comment writing opportunities can be really wonky and weird and bureaucratic, and that's not everyone's thing. So we're going to try and make this everyone's thing. So come to that if you're feeling new in this space. And then Sammy mentioned the Roadless Town Hall events that are going to be coming up in person as well. So that's going to be the first couple weeks of April. There's a link on here to sign up for our mailing list, so you'll get invites to all of these events. We meet roughly every month. We try to have an in-person and online event, so I hope to see you at those as well.
Is that intro to public lands defense? Is that just for folks in Oregon, or could some of us who have come from Oregon,
anywhere,
Oregon, sit in on that?
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we'd love to have you there. Yeah. Great question. Did everybody get this link?
Okay. I think it's in the resource too.
Okay. So introducing myself one more time, my name is Gabrielle Berthel, and I'm a forest advocate with the Natural Resources Defense Council. And a lot of my
intro to public lands defense, is that just for folks in Oregon, or could some of us who have come from Oregon, I mean, from
anywhere,
Oregon, sit in on that?
Absolutely. Yeah, okay. Yeah, we'd love to have you there. Yeah, great question. Did everybody get this link?
Okay. I think it's in the resource too.
Okay. So, introducing myself one more time, my name is Gabrielle Berthel, and I'm a forest advocate with the Natural Resources Defense Council. And a lot of my work focuses on partnerships and outreach to, allies and other groups. And the reason I sort of mention that is NRDC is not a grassroots organization, and I am not really a grassroots organizer. So I'm a little bit of an odd puzzle piece to this conversation, but I will do my best to tie it all together, so stay with me. So I'm just going to ground my section in a little bit of a personal story. So when I was younger, I saw rallies and protests and these public demonstrations as something that was a really important... Okay, so introducing myself one more time, my name is Gabrielle Berthel, and I'm a forest advocate with the Natural Resources Defense Council. And a lot of my work focuses on partnerships and outreach to, allies and other groups. And the reason I sort of mention that is NRDC is not a grassroots organization, and I am not really a grassroots organizer. So I'm a little bit of an odd puzzle piece to this conversation, but I will do my best to tie it all together, so stay with me. So I'm just going to ground my section in a little bit of a personal story. So when I was younger, I saw rallies and protests and these public demonstrations as something that was a really important piece of the puzzle, a really important component of the ecosystem, but maybe not my niche. Like, I was much more comfortable behind a keyboard. I would much rather, work behind the scenes, do a literature review, help with a legal filing, but putting myself out there in a, raw sort of public space is just, it just wasn't something that I was super comfortable with. And that is part of what drew me to NRDC. Again, we're just not, super known for our on-the-ground presence. We're much more in the policy space. We're in the litigation space. And so these photos are from one of the very first rallies I ever did. I was a year or two out of undergrad. I'd only been working at NRDC for months, probably. This is 2018. And this is in Trump's first term. And EPA had just announced the repeal and replace of the Clean Power Plan. And the EPA only held one public hearing in the entire nation, and it was in Chicago. And I'm based in Chicago, so I didn't really have an excuse not to attend. And I was really waffling about it. I was like, maybe I can just submit written comments and I can pass it off to a colleague and they can turn it in for me. But one of my comms colleagues really pushed me and was like, Gabby, just come on, come downtown, let's just do it. And after giving my testimony to the EPA in person in a room packed with colleagues, partners, concerned citizens, and then going outside and experiencing a rally and seeing everybody with signs, and it was, all our coalition partners, and, Sierra Club was there, and it was such an energizing moment. It really, it was like going for a run. I didn't want to do it. I was dreading it. I did it, and I felt really good afterwards. So, I think that's the kind of, if all of this has sounded really cool, but maybe not in your comfort zone, I would challenge you to show up. There is joy to be found in showing up, pushing yourself to grow a little bit outside your comfort zone. And I mean, even when we were planning this session, we repeatedly came back to how challenging it can be to find joy in this moment. It's bleak out there, but sharing that burden with other people, other like-minded people, even if it's not perfectly in your wheelhouse, can really, I think, buoy you through these harder times. So I found joy in showing up, and I hope that all of you can as well. So in the intervening years since then, because it's been, 8 years, I have really come to value showing up, doing these sorts of rallies, working in partnerships with local and community groups. And, I mentioned NRDC is an international organization. We don't even have local chapters. We don't do volunteers. Our grassroots presence is pretty limited. But we do have a commitment to environmental justice. We have state and regional advocates that work closely within communities. And then on our national campaigns like Roadless, we have a great venture partners. So, you know, we work really, really closely with those people who do have the on the ground presence, who do have that that ability to mobilize and bring people together. So, for example, I will skirt past Roadless just in this little part and point you to the top right photo there, which features my former colleague, Rita. She was one of those advocates I mentioned that had more of a state and regional focus. So she was working in a coalition with some local California folks, and she was getting people to turn out to public hearings. She was helping them submit comments, and generally just did a ton of education about the public health impacts of biomass energy, like what the CEQA process looks like. And, you know, despite being based in Oregon, with the power of Zoom and a couple road trips, was really able to, like, work closely in partnership with this coalition and had some great results. Closer to home for me, we also do a ton of work with partners in Chicago's South and West Sides and our EJ neighborhoods. And we work on things like industrial siting, lead in drinking water, energy efficiency and affordability, things that really do impact local communities. And so the photo right below that is of my friend Shakina, who was speaking at a Get the Lead Out rally to replace lead pipes for drinking water in Chicago. And so the reason I, you know, point out these little examples and what I really just want to acknowledge is that the opportunity to gather joyfully can be limited depending on your organization structure, depending on where you are in the country, depending on a lot of things. So, you know, 95% of Rita and Shakina and my time is spent behind a keyboard, on Zoom, not really interfacing with people in person. And I think it's just really awesome that when you do have that rare opportunity to participate in a rally or in a hearing or in a demonstration, it's an opportunity to, like, celebrate the work that happened behind the keyboard for those, like, months and months of isolation. And it's like a rare moment to, like, not only win the win, but, like, win the work. Like, you're celebrating the work as you're doing it. And I think that really just helps, like, buoy you to that next comment drive or that, you know, next filing that you've got coming up or horribly long report with a million citations you have to then go proof. Like, there's something to be said for just having that, like, interim moment to be like, all right, like, let's all get together. Let's hurrah a little bit. And then we'll get back to work. So I just think that if you have an opportunity to, like, show up in partnership, support your colleagues, support your coalition partners, it's super worth it. And I found it really rewarding. Okay, so I mentioned a couple times partners, empowering partners, working with partners. So, like, what does that actually look like in practice? Sometimes it's pass-through grants. Sometimes it's like, we're a big org. You have on-the-ground presence. Here's some money. Go do something awesome. Sometimes it's producing a study or conducting a really issue-specific piece of polling. These things are really expensive, so we did some polling for the Roadless Rule. We were able to do focus groups, we did national polling, and then we shared that with our whole coalition. We were like, here's the information, go run with it. We can organize site visits sometimes, so, like, if we do have a partner that's doing really great work out in a national forest or a tribal partner that wants to show off, you know, their landscape restoration and what they've been doing, we can go out there and, you know, spend a week or a weekend or however long we've got and just see what they're doing. Like, show that physical show of support where, you know, again, maybe we aren't funding their programs. So if we learn about it, we can then connect them to other people. Like, it's always just building that network, seeing where you can plug in. And, you know, while we sometimes do complain about the bureaucracy inherent to large organizations, we also have a lot of resources and a lot of capacity to take on those more expensive tasks for the coalition. And I think it's a huge privilege to be able to plug into the great work that our partners are doing in that way, even if, again, we aren't necessarily situated or equipped to do that more on the ground grassroots stuff. I also want to acknowledge that, you know, we can help our coalitions draft policy, we can co-litigate, but we also have something like 3 million members. And so when we send out an email blast, that goes to a massive email list. And so We've got a lot of legal standing when it comes to wanting to intervene and take legal action. We've got a big comment period list, so if we, you know, we're sending out a take action to protect roadless forests, that reaches a lot of people. And so it's really not your typical grassroots work. It is more of that clicktivism, but it's leveraging our unique position to do whatever we can do, however most effectively we can, and just, you know, again, building out that ecosystem of action. I like that Victoria said all ships rise, or a rising tide raises all ships, because that's exactly how I see it. You know, when I see a lot of folks engaged on the issues that we care about, I think that's a win. Like, I want to see the work products that we produce. I want to see this report, you know, in everybody's inbox. I want to see the money that we send out into the world being put to do really cool events. And I just want to see us, like, all making a difference together. So, you know, we really do try to work at all levels, elevating the unique capacities and, you know, resources that different organizations that operate at different levels can have and bring to bear with our partners. So I also am not, like, trying to pretend that NRDC is unique in that. I think a lot of big national orgs will have similar sort of mentalities about, you know, working with partners, getting that on the ground work done, even if we aren't necessarily situated for it. Okay. So, in conclusion, the fight can look really different, right? Depending on your organization, depending on the levels of government that you interface with, depending on your goals and priorities, the fight can be very different. But at the end of the day, I think we've got some common goals. We want the public to know what's going on with their environment. If it's public lands, if it's the pipes that bring the water to your home, whatever the issue is, we want the public to know what's going on. We want to make information accessible and engaging to the public. A lot of times that is through really cool events where you're tabling and you're talking to people one-on-one, or it could be through a social media campaign, or it could be through an influencer campaign. We want to elevate the voices and perspectives of our stakeholders. These are the people who are just impacted. If something impacts you, you should have a say. You should have a say in the democratic process. That could be writing comments. That could be you know, attending a lobby day, but we want to make sure that the people who are most impacted have a voice. And I think we really have to stay rooted in balancing the serious with the scary. These are serious issues, but nihilism is absolutely petrifying. If we are cooked, like if there's, you know, no hope, if we let people believe what our darker thoughts might suggest, that the fight is already lost, then again, we are doing polluting industries a huge favor. Yep. So, persevering and preserving that thread of joy, gathering together to share energy in the movement, digging up old SNL GIFs because they're really funny and they have dancing trees, and acknowledging out loud like how far we've come and that we are determined to keep going, I think can really inspire action, inspire change, while also, you know, maintaining the seriousness of these issues. It's okay to be funny and uplifting and glib, but also like undermining or underpinning that this is a serious issue and these are absolutely vital to do the work on. And so that's it for me.
This is just to highlight the resources list that we have, we shared, because there's so many different pieces. There's podcasts, there's books, there's articles, and there's links to a lot of the events. There's also this playlist that we have that I was going to edit because it has some explicit songs in, but then I realized there's also like a lot of joy and cussing, so just like don't play like a toddler's birthday party. But yeah, so there's all these kind of different tools.
Those are posted on the website too.
They're on it all in this. Okay. We're really, yeah.
Thank you.